Welcome to Leveraging Leadership, where we unpack the art of business leadership. I'm your host, Emily Sander, Chief of Staff turned Executive Leadership Coach. In this series, we dive into the role of Chief of Staff, exploring how it can be a game changer and pivotal player on your leadership team. You'll get a backstage pass and learn about the different aspects of the role and what it takes to excel in it. We'll hear from some incredible guests who have firsthand experience serving as Chief of Staff or collaborating with one on their team. And don't forget, the Chief of Staff isn't just a title or person. It represents a leadership philosophy. Leveraging Leadership is all about finding your points of greatest influence and leveraging them to better serve those around you. Madhu, thank you so much for being on Leveraging Leadership. How are you?
So grateful to be here. I'm so excited to speak with you about topics, especially things that we can immediately start to apply to make life a little easier. Thanks for creating such a great space for us to get to come together.
Love it. So you are a former monk, so you trained as a monk for a number of years, and now you have a seven-figure online business, and you're helping wellness professionals serve others better, and that's what you're doing now. So I want to back up a little bit and get into how and why did you become a monk? How did that come about?
Yeah, you're telling me that 18-year-old young men don't want to become celibate and move to...
I see it differently. I've seen different things from that age group.
Yeah, well, long story short, what happened was I was always curious about philosophy and theology because I was raised in a household that I was really inclined to ask lots of questions and be very curious. So inevitably, I was started asking the big questions like, what the heck am I here to do? Do I just have to like do a job I don't like, to make a little money doing something I don't want to do, to live in a box I don't live in? Like, I was not into the standard expectations of life around me. And so as a teenager, I started exploring primarily first Western philosophy. That's what I had available. But then I started looking to the East and I started reading ancient literatures like the Bhagavad Gita, which is only 5,000 years old. That's it. And different other literatures that teach on the nature of self, the nature of purpose, the nature of why to live, what to do, why you're living, how to... Anyway, all of the bigger questions of life, if you will. And I started explore going to different types of places of practitioners, different types of practices, different types of philosophies, et cetera. And I finally came, after exploring a lot, I came to one practice, which is called Bhakti Yoga, which just every question I had, there was an answer. And not only do they have an answer, but answers that I actually could appreciate and resonate with.
Okay.
And then on my 18th birthday, I was no longer a minor, so they'd let me become a monk and shaved my head, put on orange robes, and started living in India half the year and then monasteries in the West the other.
Wow. So you went straight to like the deep questions, like the good stuff, not the superficial, okay, why are we here? What are we about? And then just out of curiosity, so when living as a monk in India, like what was your typical day or week? What did that look like?
Yeah. It's very similar for India as well as in the West. So what we would do is we'd wake up at about 3:30 in the morning, 3:34. I don't do that anymore.
Already, I'm not a monk. Yeah, okay.
Don't worry, don't do that anymore. No, and wake up at about 3:34 in the morning and then clean yourself physically, a shower, et cetera. And then you'd get right into some meditation where we'd start with group meditation. Get into some practice there. Then we would do about 2 hours of individual meditation. Then we would study for some time. We'd have some classes, go deep into the knowledge, philosophy, et cetera. Munch is my favorite part of the day. And you have some breakfast.
An official monk term. You munch.
Yeah. Munch. Ah, I love that. And then we would have our different services. According to one's psychophysical nature, one would be engaged in a different type of way. So for instance, for me, I've never been... short versed, for better or for worse. And that's the kind way to say it. And I would go to different universities and teach meditation and, you know, break down the ancient literatures like that. And, you know, people who enjoy cooking, they would cook for everyone. And people who would enjoy, anyway, different types of natures with different types of desires, everyone would be engaged in a way relevant to them and do service that day around that practice. And yeah, a little meditation in the evening. And then by that time, you're ready to sleep. How was Starbucks?
Wow. Okay, that's amazing. So let's just dive right in. So taking that backdrop and then applying it to a busy business professional's life. So almost the opposite of what you just said, except for maybe waking up at the crack of dawn. But they are running around from the minute they wake up and they're checking their email. They've got their phone. They've got all these different things going on. And they're whizzing through their day. So what's even a good place to start on how to start talking about some of the concepts that you were trained in?
Yeah, well, I think that an important fundamental to look at and to talk about and to mention is that while being a monk, you learn that everyone has unique gifts. And it's very obvious. If you don't believe me, just talk to people. You'll see very quickly. If you ask them the right questions, you'll see how amazing, phenomenal people are. And what we want to do, what we wanted to do as monks, I should say, is to figure out what are people's inherent gifts. There's a Sanskrit term called dharma, which means the intrinsic quality of something. Like, what are people's unique gifts? What are they supposed to be doing, in other words? And then how do we figure out how to, well, spend more time doing that, as opposed to doing the other things that are going to be more draining or exhausting or, frankly, a waste of time in some cases. And so starting with the idea that we always want to figure out, okay, what are my gifts? What am I actually here to do according to the way my brain works? Why am I doing what I'm doing in the first place? Because if we can figure that out, then the next step from there is, what should I be doing and what shouldn't I be doing? Mm-hmm. Just taking a simple look at my day and saying, you know, what are the things that are actually nourishing for me and what are the things that are not? I don't suggest people only do what's quote unquote easy, but I do suggest that people choose their heart as opposed to just being thrusted in almost unconsciously to doing things that are against right. their mindset and against their nature. So once we have an idea, this is what my gifts are, these are the things I should be doing, then it's a matter of actually scrutinizing our days and saying, where am I spending time in places I should not be spending my time? And I don't want to should on you guys. I don't like to should on myself either. But the idea is, like, where am I out of integrity with my gifts? Where am I not actually of service? Where am I not in a place of contribution, but rather in a place of just default, conditioned, repetitive tendencies? And from there, taking a conscious approach, a conscious look at, what can I modify? What can I change to make sure I'm, number one, doing what I, quote unquote, should be doing with my gifts? And then from there, the question is very easy to answer. And that is, how do I spend more time in a place of, you could say, alignment, in a place of what I should be doing? That's always the fundamental place. Otherwise, if we talk about how to rearrange our day, but you hate 80% of it,
yeah,
that's going to be
understandable. What's the point of
that? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So it sounds like there's this greater alignment. It's like the big question of, what do I feel like I'm here to do? How do I fulfill my purpose? And then aligning your day to that as best you can. So at least the majority of the time, you're kind of in that space, or maybe in flow state, or whatever you want to call it. And that's so funny. I've never heard it described like you have, but I certainly hold the same concept of, I believe everyone has this unique mix of gifts and talents and things that they bring to the table, and certainly things they are meant to do. So for instance, you know, you're a musician. There are certain people who are born to be musicians or born to be singers, like Whitney Houston, or all, you know, the opera singers, or these people who have just tremendous gifts, and they also come to life when they're doing that. I should not be a singer. So I should not be let anywhere near an instrument. That's not my talent or skill set. But I think the first step of figuring out what that is so important, because then you can point everything else that you do towards it, in a sense. So on that vein, so just stay at that high level for a second, and we'll certainly get into some practical and tactical pieces. But if someone's going, okay, great, like, what am, like, what's my purpose of life? You're starting with that question. How can one discern what that is, or at least get a little bit closer?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of everything from personality tests to different understandings and different languages and different countries of how to do that. But what I'd like to share is some of the points that they all tend to meet on. And I mean, what I mean by science is, there's everything from, in Sanskrit, we call it dharma. There's, in Northern Orient, we say ikigai. There's Enneagram. There's different learning capabilities, from kinesthetic to musical to interpersonal. There's a bunch of different systems and sciences to help us you could say, expedite introspection to understand the way our mind works. Great. And so I am a big fan of using whatever tools come to you to help understand your
whatever way in you can get. Go do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think that there's so many systems one can use to help, but ultimately we start, the way I suggest it is we start with what we call a gifts list. That's G-I-F-T-S, gifts list. And that means start by writing down a long list of all the things that you are good at and love doing. Now, it might be a long list. It might not be that long a list because it's very possible that you have a handful of really prominent gifts. Maybe you have a bunch, a buttload for it, whatever. You got a handful, you got a lot. It doesn't matter as long as you have some. If you have one, that life is successful.
Go with that one, yeah.
Exactly. And so the idea is start with a gifts list and write down what are all the things that I am good at. Not the best at, because the mind says, I'm the worst. I'm the best. You're neither. You're neither. That's the mind. Don't entertain it. We're always in that gray area in the middle. It's never black and white. And so what are the things that I am decent, good at, phenomenal at, and that I enjoy doing? Always starting from that place, because once you've identified those primary areas of life that you're like, yeah, love doing this and I'm dang good at it. Even let's say there's a handful, even if you're not sure which one you should be doing per se, you at least now have a guardrail of like, okay, something in this area. This is a good place to start. And the cool thing is the way that we get out of what we call analysis paralysis or just like decision fatigue. I don't want to make the wrong move. And if I make the wrong choice and go in the wrong career, then I'll waste time. I don't believe that there's such a thing. I believe that the way to overcome this analysis paralysis is to make a logical decision based off the things you do know you enjoy and are at least decent at. And then from there, just get moving. Because once you start, you'll know pretty quickly if it's actually a fit or if it's not. The challenge really comes when we get stuck in that place of decision fatigue where we just don't move, where we're just in our head considering everything that could be done. And then 5 years go by, we're like, we're still thinking about what are the options? Which one should I be doing? Rather, is figure out with clarity what you definitely know you like to do, that you're decent at, if not great at, and just move in that direction. And it'll be very apparent. It will be obvious if that is the direction or not. And if it's not, cool, pivot. Try. Do it again.
Change your mind. Yeah.
Exactly. And you can do that for the rest of your life.
Well, I think, you know, I've had so many times in my life where I'm a planner and I like to know specifics. Like I like to know when and who and how and all these different things. And life doesn't serve that up for you. And so it's like, okay, let me move in this direction. And then, as you say, let things unfold and then kind of make the next decision from there, which I think is actually, it's not only a beautiful way to live, but it's pretty much the only way to live, because you can't try to control all these different factors, or at least I couldn't. So thank you for that.
Change is the only constant.
And then if we go kind of maybe one layer deeper, so let's take career, for example, and people listening to this are executives, early executives, C-suite executives, maybe some founders and entrepreneurs, and, you know, time to them is a very precious commodity and unit of time is something to consider. And I think I know I didn't want to waste time as a chief of staff or as an executive. And I would also often say, like, I don't have time to meditate, or I don't have time to be mindful, all these things, which, you know, sound ridiculous now. But can you talk about why someone would want to invest time and energy into building maybe a mindfulness practice or, you know, a clarity practice or whatever you want to call it in your life?
Absolutely. I often like to say that you don't have time not to meditate. I mean, most of the people, you know, everyone I work with who are also in that type of situation where they're very successful and very busy. And there's one common thread, and that is that the mind is always active. There's nothing that we could change. The mind is always active. So when we're talking about meditating, we're not talking about stopping the mind. We're not talking about shutting it down. It wouldn't work. It's, you know, you can't put a square peg in a circular hole. Like it doesn't work. It's never going to be a function of reality that the mind can stop. So really what we're talking about in terms of how to become more efficient in our day and utilize our time is learning how to control the mind. Because if you can figure out how to control the mind, which is always active by nature, then what happens is, as long as you're willing to be slightly disciplined and have a decent plan, just those two things, have a good plan and be slightly disciplined, then you will not only know what to do when, but you will have the wherewithal, the determination to actually get it done. So practically what that can look like, and I'm a big fan of scheduling, as are you, is what would a perfect day look like? Like, if I could snap my fingers, what would a perfect day look like, starting with the needs and then going into the wants from there? So an example is, as soon as you start getting rid of prioritizing the needs, that's when the quality of life goes down. So example being, if you're like, yeah, I'm just going to stop eating. Good luck.
Yeah.
That's, you do it long enough, there's a thing called death. It's like, right. that's not very good. Don't do that. So look at your sleep, look at your eating, like start with the essentials and say, from what time to what time would I like to be sleeping at any given day? What are my eating times? So my body starts to trust me and it isn't in a constant state of autonomic arousal or fight or flight where I'm always moving from one thing to another. Let's start with the basics, the needs of life. And then from there, we can add in the others. So starting with your sleep, schedule that in. Start with your eating times, schedule that in. If you're cooking, schedule in the cooking. Schedule in some movement time. Make sure the body's moving. Schedule in a little quiet time for the mind, meditation, et cetera. Always starting with a schedule, something that your mind can actually be confined to understand, because you can't get something if you don't know what that something is. We often like to say, you can't solve a problem if you can't write that problem down. It's like, you need clarity. You need to know what kind of day you want to live in order to live that kind of day. And be creative. Have fun with this exercise. Like, what hours do you want to work? Now, you might say, Pamadu, I can't choose. Okay, that's a different conversation. We can always talk about how to modify, but start with the ideal. And then your next question is like, what is one, two, max three things I could do this next week, this next month, this next quarter to start to move in the direction of an ideal day? Because success is not a destination. Success is an experience when your lifestyle is the way that you want it to be. That's not going to happen when you hit a mark. It's going to happen when you are doing the things you want to do when you want to do them. And you, the only place to start is knowing what to do and when to do it. So making a plan, first and foremost, is always the essential practice so that we can now look at what behaviors you need to, well, live that lifestyle.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is, big picture, we want to ask like why and our purpose and get aligned with that. And then the next level there is putting a plan around this. So scheduling our needs in there. Now, quick question. If someone's like, look, I can't like make this happen every single day at certain hours of the day, is there some sort of instincts or intuition you can use where like, hey, I need to know I have to hit these things, but exactly when I do it or exactly how I do it or where I do it can change as long as they're getting done. Is there some leeway in there when you're first implementing it?
Yeah, well, there's actually, we teach what's called the monk mindset method, which is four steps, kind of breaking this down. So the first step, as I alluded to before, is just clarity, like know what you want first and foremost. The prefrontal cortex only works and operates functionally when it knows what the desired result is. So you got this cool super computer that we have as humans that other living entities do not have. And that is a, you know, hypercomputer called the prefrontal cortex, which is actually going to allow you to figure out how to get what you want in your life. First and foremost, figure out what you do want and make sure that it's actually the desire and not the means. An example is, don't say, I want to work out every day. You don't want to work out every day. You want to feel healthy. You want to feel strong. So talk about that. Don't talk about the thing that will get you that, because that's why people fail to follow up. They go, I got to work out every day. No, no. If you know that every time you sit down to work out or stand up to work out, you know what I mean? You're like, okay, I'm getting much closer to feeling more comfortable in my body, feeling stronger in my body, et cetera. So start with the desire. From there, then we get into the behaviors. What are the behaviors you must commit yourself to doing on a regular basis to achieve those? What do you know with certainty you need to commit to get those? An example being your needs. They got to be met. You got to be eating. You got to be sleeping. You got like certain things you can't play around with. And so once you've done that, then you can create an ideal schedule per se. Like, what would a perfect day look like? But even if you can't follow that every day, you now know what behaviors you need to commit to do consistently, even if they're not at the same time every day. I am a fan of trying to finagle as much consistency into your days as possible. So like whatever things you can control every day, do that. But if you can't, then you refer back to the behaviors. And the fourth step from there is just figuring out what's going to get you to stop, and you make a whole plan to stop.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's the classic, if you want a different output, you have to change the input. So if you want a dramatic change and you're like, I've always been this way, well, then you have to do something completely new. And it's probably going to be uncomfortable and perhaps scary, but that's what's going to get you to a different outcome. So I think throwing that out there is a good reminder as well. And then let's get into meditation, because that's, you know, that was a big part of your day-to-day as a monk and certainly your training. And that's definitely kind of taken the Western world by storm here at varying levels. And for myself, I know that I have tried to become someone who meditates like probably 4 times in my life. So distinct, like time and place and pillow and things and guided meditation and all the rest. And they never worked. And what works for me is different kinds of meditation, like a walking meditation, or if I go through a certain doorway, I'll remember to say certain things just to clear my head, or just building in pockets of time like that. I would love to meditate in a more robust fashion. The closest thing I probably have to like sitting down with crossed legs and like closing my eyes and meditating is in the morning. I'll just sit there without my phone, without anything, and I'll just look out the window. And I do have a journal where I'll kind of write down some stuff that comes to me, but I'll just be and I'll just sit there. And whatever comes up in my head, I'll kind of see those thoughts. And the analogy that I heard from someone was a river. You're sitting by a river and your thoughts are the leaves, and they go by the river and they just constantly go by. So you're like, that's a thought. There's the leaf. There it goes. That's a new thought. Okay, there's the leaf. There it goes. And so that's the closest thing I have to meditation. But tell us a little bit about, you know, how would you approach meditation, not for a monk, but for a busy professional. Hi, Emily here. I just wanted to take 10 seconds to highlight the power of one-on-one coaching at nextlevel.coach. Get the tools for success and leave each session feeling refreshed and refocused.
For us normal folk, yeah, well, yeah. First off, I'll just say that those are beautiful meditations right there. I mean, you said the closest thing to meditation, I say that is meditation.
Okay.
That's super exciting. Cool. I often share this idea that for people who say, I tried meditating, I don't like it, I always just say, you haven't done the right meditation. It's really just that simple. It's like, no one would say, I don't like music or I don't like food. If somebody said that, the logical idea is like, oh, you just haven't eaten the right food. You just haven't listened to the right music. And so when it comes to meditation, the real question is, how do we practice a meditation that I can actually fall in love with, that doesn't feel like me just forcing myself every day? Oftentimes we hear the example of working out. I mean, I know for myself that I rarely stop my day and go, you know what I really like to do right now is go downstairs to my gym and like give myself a lot of pain by lifting things that are really heavy.
Rip my muscles apart and then have them repair themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. I never am like, I really just want to go do that right now, but I do it anyway for discipline. And so there are some things in our life that we just want to be disciplined in, but what happens over time is you get a taste for it and it becomes like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll go work out right now. And we all experience it. In the beginning, it's tough, but then it becomes easier and easier. And even though there's a little push, usually the push is just getting yourself in the position. Like once you're in the gym, it's fine. Yeah. Once you've grabbed the weight, you're fine, whatever the case might be. So it's the same thing with meditation. Is in the beginning, learning anything is going to be precarious and unusual and unknown. But what we want to do is just figure out first and foremost how to get ourselves in the situation at the right time, because that's the hard part. It's just making the decision to start. I'm a big fan of starting really small, incremental bites. There's this person in the 70s who ate a buggy, a Volkswagen buggy. Don't try this at home, folks. I don't encourage this. But as a way of just to prove that you can, what he did was he cut up the buggy into small little pieces and ate everything. Now, I'd say that's dumb, but I mean to say that the idea is it's clever. How do you eat a car? A piece at a time. So I'm a big fan. It's like, what can you start with? Like, what can you start with today, no matter what? Like, before you shower, right after you shower, before you go to bed, after you're done reading, like, where can you find anchors in your day and just start? And whether that's 15 seconds, whether that's a minute, whether that's 10 minutes, like, figuring out first and foremost a time that you could dedicate to it, and then just promising yourself, like, all I'm going to do is I'm just going to start. And then it's a question of what type of meditation is there. Now, that's a much bigger discussion, but what I will share is that what I found to be extremely efficient and effective, not just for myself, but for the many hundreds and hundreds of people that we've worked with and helped, thousands, is breath work is outrageously helpful for 100% of people, and you will get a visceral response with starting with breath work. There's a lot of meditations that are going to be helpful that I encourage people to work their way to, but breath work is so viscerally joyous. Like, if you're doing some breath work and you're doing it properly, not only do you feel better, like you actually get a hit, you get a jolt, you get release of certain neurotransmitters that actually allow you to feel better in your life. So I'm a big fan of encouraging people to start there with just getting in touch with their breath. And if you've never done any breath work, that means just acknowledge it. Like, this is an inhale and this is an exhale. Like, what does it feel like coming in through my nose? What does it feel like coming out through my mouth? Just start to get aware of the breath. Yes. And then from there, we can get into various types of practices to actually allow you to have a physiological change of the presence of mind. And then from there, once you're in that state, that flow, that peace, that centered, at that point is when it's beneficial to get into, say, meditations where it takes a little bit more mind control. And I'd be happy to share some.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. So, I mean, there's so much to tag onto there. So I think maybe the different types of meditation, because if someone's saying, well, the only type I'm aware of is where you sit cross-legged and you close your eyes. And I'm like, there's no way you're getting me to do that. Is there, you know, you've mentioned kind of batching your habits to something else or anchoring them. So, you know, you shower every day or you brush your teeth every day and maybe you attach it to that. Are there some like easy, quick ways to build that into your process?
Yeah. Well, even though multitasking is not real, I still encourage we do it when it comes to trying to, you can say, dovetail new behaviors with behaviors that are already there. Yep. And so, you know, some examples would be with showering. I mean, I would say take the things you do every day that you don't mind doing, or even if you do mind doing it, you do them every day. And so an example is, you know, everyone's showering, hopefully every day. You got to shower, you know, you're eating. So maybe you take a few minutes before you eat. You know, take those things that you're going to do no matter what, you know, before you're allowed to brush your tooth, whatever it might be. Take those things. And then if you can couple them, an example would be in the shower as well. You're you do 10, say, hyper-oxygenating breaths where you just, just taking lots of air in. For those of you not watching, I just took an outrageously ridiculous
breath. Yes, you did.
You're like, what was that sound? It's just a big breath in and a big sigh out. Starting with something that's just easy while you're showering, just doing 10. That's not going to take you any extra time. So when your mind goes, I don't got the time. You do got the time. It's right there. We just found it.
And the shower is a good place because, sorry to jump in there, but you have no distractions. You shouldn't have your phone in your shower. Like, a whole bunch of people shouldn't be going crazy in your shower. Like, you have time to take 10 breaths. And like, we all shower is pretty much on autopilot. So that's a good place to start, maybe. Sorry, absolutely. Go ahead.
No, that's brilliant. Yeah, what you shared is so essential because let's start with making it easy. I'm a big fan of easy. I'm so lazy. I'm so proud to be lazy because I'm just like unwavering with making things simple. And like, I'm just not interested in doing more than I have to do. So starting with just dovetailing them, finding times where you can squeeze them into your days, like a shower, like you so eloquently expressed, such a good time, and figure out what do I do any given day. And, you know, before a meal is also a great time. You just set, you know, a 2-minute timer on your phone and you do some deep breaths, because not only are you now going to digest the meal better and feel more energized from it, but it's like, you know, you're going to eat at some point. And so finding some time there and just ask yourself, like, what can I do? Like, what can I commit to that feels like a little push, but not such a push where I'm going to quit? And the question I like to ask myself and I encourage others ask is, what can I commit to doing every day, no matter what? And we call this the house on fire desire. It's like, I don't care if the house burns down, I got to go do my 10 breaths. Like what can I commit to doing every day? An example being like showering. Since we're talking about, like, why not talk about that? It's like, no one has to convince you to shower. Why? Because the time it takes to do that creates so much more positive opportunities in your day. So how do we then eventually make meditation be one of those things where it's like, I cannot live my day without meditating. I become like, I freak out. I don't know what it's like because it's been over a decade since then, because I know what it's like when I don't meditate. So it's just like, I have to shower. I have to eat. I have to brush my tooth. I have to do a long slow things. I have to meditate because I don't have the time. I do not have the time to not meditate. That's the direction we want to move in.
So let's move into the benefits. You kind of segued us into the benefits. So if someone's like, okay, I've heard meditation is good, but you know, I'm not really familiar with like what it does and how it changes my brain chemistry, or why I should invest all this time in developing these micro habits and batching these habits, all these things. You know, some of the things that I've shared with people, and you probably know far more, but I've shared, you know, when you have clarity, first of all, you just feel better. So when you're not like, this is like 100 miles a minute all in all directions, you just feel more centered and more grounded, and you can see things more clearly. And so you could, and in that state, you can also make higher quality decisions. And as a leader, that's very important. And you also show up better to people around you. And as a leader, that's also very important, because all of your team and everyone around you is taking their cues from you as the leader. And so those things, to me, the high quality decisions, I harp on people on that. You know, you don't have to become a monk, but you do have to get in a place where you're in a good position to lead, and you can make those decisions that are going to affect hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And then I've also kind of self-taught myself about how you can rewire your brain. So if, like, I've always been this way and I have this knee-jerk reaction to this thing, well, you can actually separate that and like defuse those things, and you can literally change your brain and its structure and its chemistry and change who you are, essentially, which I was like, that's fascinating. So when I found that whole body of work, I was like, oh my gosh, this is really impressive. So can you just share some, like, why you would want to do this and how it helps the quality of life?
Absolutely. Well, there's a word I'll say, which is called core self or aligned self, connected self. There's we've all experienced a presence in our mind when we actually feel good. Like, we feel connected, and there's tons of vernacular we can give to it. But the idea is, I'll just say this term core self, use whatever term might suit you. But the idea is like the highest version of yourself, the most clear, present, relaxed, relieved version of yourself. We all know what that's like when we're there and we go, ah. And we all know what it's like when we step outside of that core self. And you know, an example I like to give for those of you watching, I'm just drawing like an invisible line up and down, like a line from my head down to my heart. It's like there's an alignment. There's like a centered. And then when I step outside of that aligned self, when I go into a state of fear, anxiety, worry, sadness, whatever the case might be, and I step outside of that, I start to feel that stimulation viscerally in my body, feel it in my mind. So we don't have to convince anyone that there's a centering and then there's an out of centering. Rather, what we want to start to do is figure out, how can we get back to center? What do I need to do to not only stay in center, but get the heck back there if I step out? And there's an exercise I call, we call it stressors and relievers, which is, what are the things that pull me out? And then what are the things that pull me back? Because when you pull back, when you're in that centered, we are often experiencing what we call, it's your parasympathetic nervous system, which has nothing to do with the emotion sympathy, but it has to do with the function of the central nervous system, which is, we call it the rest and digest. It's what puts your body in a position where you can actually be destimulated, be decompressed, as opposed to the sympathetic nervous system response, which is the fight or flight, where you're going, where you're anxious, you're moving. We always want to come back into a state of, we would say a parasympathetic release. And there's a few ways that we could explore doing that, which will inevitably make you feel better, improve your immune functioning. I mean, there's a long slew of...
I like the word slew. We never had that in the podcast before. But before we get into that long slew, I just want to say for our listeners, most people listening to this, I would guess, Madhu, are living constantly in the out of alignment state. So they don't even know what it's like to be in alignment and to be centered and grounded. And so I think one thing that a meditation practice, even if it's like a micro habit at the beginning, can teach is like, oh, this is what that feels like. Oh, there is such a thing as this. And then you can kind of make holes and make pockets in the screen that's the rest of the world, where it's like, oh, this is not real life. There's something else besides this. So I just wanted to mention that because a lot of people are like, wait, I'm not quite connecting with that. It might be because we've been conditioned by society and our iPhones and our computers and all this stuff to constantly be out of alignment. And so it might be, oh, let's do this for the first time and get in alignment. So yes. So
yeah, important
go ahead.
No, I say it's such an important point that you're mentioning. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I just to recap, we've got find your why, you know, small question of your purpose in life and how to fulfill that. And we had some tips at the beginning, and then building a sustainable habit in your schedule. And then I heard starting small. So like, don't freak out the system. If you're doing like 10 breaths in the shower, that's great. Like that's, you're on your way and it's way more than you're doing now. So start building in those practices. If people want to take the next step and find out more about you or kind of the services that you provide, where should they reach out to?
Yeah, well, I am very grateful that we're in a very, I'm very happy situation. And so what we do is we actually just give away all of our content and courses for free because, you know, as someone, I know how challenging it was to build my business up and, you know, the dozens of people that I work with that are high achievers that are doing things, but a little overwhelmed. It's unanimous in that we all just need a little help and a little support. And so I actually make all of my courses free, even though I mean, priceless practically, but so that anyone at any given time can just immediately start to feel the difference and start to explore. We call it the monk mindset, but like, how do you live your quote unquote normal person life, but starting to develop a monk mindset, thinking like I say, how a monk would, and developing an inner peace. So the places that we teach, you can find me on any platform at madhu.life. That's madhu.life, madhu.life. That's our website. That's our social medias. You can find us on any platform. And if you just did, how about this? Let's DM us the word. I want to make it special for you because we give everyone free access, but I want to give everyone something special if they come through this podcast. So what can be the special word?
I mean, it's called leveraging leadership, but
we can leverage.
Like yeah, we don't want to make it too long, huh?
Let's do leverage. How about this? Anyone who DMs me the word leverage, not only will we give you access to our incredible community of other, I primarily work with wellness entrepreneurs, those who are really helping others with health, but we've got tons of other conscious entrepreneurs and those who are interested in developing this monk mindset in our community, as well as a bunch of courses. Send me the word leverage on any platform, madhu.life, and we're going to get you set up with all the information. And the cool thing I will say is just be careful. And I don't have a liability form, but be careful because there's a 100% chance you will change your life through these practices. And so all I ever ask in exchange is that if you go and you enjoy some of what we teach, then my only request is that you please then share it with at least one more person. Share these practices, share these meditations, because that is the gift that keeps on giving. We're never going to be able to pay back our teachers, those who've invested their time, love, and energy into us. So what we want to do here is now just pay it forward to as many as we can.
Beautiful. All right. We'll end on that note. We'll have the links and information that you mentioned, and hopefully listeners can reach out to you with the word leverage and get kind of their bonus content material. So Madhu, thank you again so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and the energy was, as you would imagine from a monk, serene and present and positive. So I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. And I know that the ideas and tips you shared will help listeners. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you'd like some more information on the topic discussed in this episode, head over to nextlevel.coach and click on the resources page for some helpful free downloads.